Good evening, everybody, from Gustavus City Hall, and welcome to our August 1st work session, our monthly work session for the month of August. And on our agenda for the work session tonight is, as usual, the main thing is to go through the general meeting minutes. The general meeting agenda for our general meeting next Monday night. We have the draft agenda that we'll go through step by step, and that covers most of our business items there. At the end, I wanted to get some feedback from the council about proceeding to negotiate on a possible purchase of the Salmon River Boat Harbor Central tract that we don't own. So I'm looking forward to feedback from the council on what to do about that, whether to proceed with that. And then I also want to talk about the need for possibly a budget line for groundskeeping for our facilities. So we'll talk about those two things, and I'll outline or give you a little bit of update on some meetings that are scheduled for the mayor here. So we'll start with the draft agenda. And as usual, we have the approval of minutes first. And so I hope everybody will have read those minutes. They're in the packet, and see if you have any, if council members have any suggested changes for them or corrections. We'll have committee or rather staff reports from the Visitors Association, the PFAS Action Coalition, the Gustavus Disposal and Recycling Center's quarterly report, the city treasurer's monthly financials and quarterly report, and the city administrator's monthly report. Public comment on non-agenda items, of course, then the consent agenda. So we'll go through these four items that are on the consent agenda. And if any of you think that we ought to move one of these in our agenda to new business, we'll do that when we post the actual agenda for the general meeting. This is only the draft agenda at this point. So if any of those four look like something that we want to have or provide for public hearing on, public comment on, that sort of thing, or if they're at all controversial or something might need an amendment, then we can consider moving them to new business at that point.
Mayor?
Yes.
I would recommend going through each item individually to describe them. You might have been planning on doing that. I just wanted to make sure you didn't skip that.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, we'll go through each one of these items and right now, and so you can get a chance to understand them better. The first is to approve the calculation of the endowment fund grant account amount for this next cycle. And that calculation is in the packet. Looks like on about page 7. And this is we have a procedure that we follow to do this calculation. And you can see some highlights here. The when we check the inflation proofing on the original $963,000 that was granted to the city that started this account, we multiply that by the adjustment for inflation, which is 1.46. So the adjusted inflation protected or amount of the account would be $1,405,980. The present market value of the fund for June 30, 2022 was $1,441,997. So that means that the present market value of the account still exceeds the inflation adjusted value of the original investment. The next step is to determine what excess earnings are available as of June 30, 2022. And that's the difference of the present value of the fund and the inflation adjusted original value. And that difference is $36,017.18. Our procedure calls for evaluating also the average value of the fund over the last 5 years, and then taking a 3% amount of that average to determine what could also be considered for inclusion in the grant opportunities for this year. And so the average value of the fund was $1.491 million. 3% of that average is $44,750.07. Now, our procedure then calls for us to choose whichever one of those is lower. In other words, so that we're not reducing the value of the fund below its inflation-adjusted original value. And so that leads us to a conclusion that the that we use the difference between the original inflation-adjusted value and the present value of $36,017.18 as the amount that would be available for the grants this year. So we don't do is we won't be making available as much as we would if we used the 3% of the average of the last 5 years. And the reason we're in that situation, I think for the first time this year, is that the markets went down considerably the first part of this year. And we also have had quite a bit of inflation. So the inflation adjusted value of the fund went up. And so we are using the difference between the inflation adjusted value of the fund and the market fund is what's available to offer as grants this year without, that'll keep us from reducing the inflation adjusted value of the fund. So it's a conservative measure. Do any members of the council have any questions about this or want to discuss it? If so, raise your hand, please, since everybody's at home except for me. You don't do it. Looks like nobody wanted to ask questions about that. So that's on our agenda for approval. And it's on the consent agenda. And so I take it nobody cares. Oh, it looks like Lewis Sharman has his hand up. Lewis?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I just wanted to confirm that we're not obligated to spend those funds, right? It's just we can spend up to that amount if we so decide, correct?
Yeah, I think that's a correct statement of it. We're not obligated to do it, but our policy and procedure sets forth the steps for doing this. The council could certainly choose something different from what's calculated by the policy and procedure. Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, great. Anybody else with a question or comment on this? Okay. So we'll leave that on the consent agenda for approval. And if something comes up where you think it ought to come off the consent agenda, you can always, of course, pull it at the when we approve the, when we come to the consent agenda, you can ask to move any item on it to new business. Okay, the next is to approve a scoping document for the Marine Facilities work skiff and trailer. And I think we may have our Marine Facilities coordinator, Ben Sadler, on the line. Ben, are you on, and would you like to speak to this, or should I just go ahead and introduce it?
Yes, Mike, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Okay, so I think that the scoping document has the pertinent information in it. Basically, what it comes down to is currently we're paying $5,000 to move the steel float to Bull Moose Cove and $5,000 to move it back, $10,000 a year. Previously, we were paying $3,000 to move it each way when we had somebody here in town doing it. So it seems to me that because the breakwater isn't necessarily in our near future, that it makes more sense for us to purchase our own vessel that has the capability of moving the steel float than it does for us to continue paying an outside company to come and help us move it. It'll give us more independence. It'll allow us to do it on our time schedule instead of on someone else's time schedule. And it'll also give us a vessel, which we don't currently have, which we could use for other things like moving the floats around in the boat harbor, removing trees and stumps and stuff from the river, and any other reason we might need a vessel. Currently, if I need a boat to do something, I use my dinghy. That's really really slim what I can do with my dinghy. So that's why I'm asking for the $30,000. I did include two options that have been available since Mike and I started talking about it. One was $14,000, but needed some work. One was $28,000, but was ready to go. So I put in $30,000 for a work skiff and a trailer. I'm not hoping to spend that much, but if I would have had that money available, I could have bought either of the other two as they became available. And because that money was not available, they both sold while I was working on the scoping document. So hopefully I could get something cheaper, but if not, that's the amount of money that it seems could get us what we need. So unless anybody has any questions, that's all I have.
Looks like Lewis has a question. Lewis?
Yeah, Ben, tell us a little bit more about what we were looking at getting for $15,000 to $25,000.
So what we're using currently to move the steel float is a seine skiff. It's a gentleman named Bill Beeler who lives in Hoonah, and he's a seine operator. And so he has a seine skiff with a 453 diesel in it, and it's a tractor. It just comes in and moves that thing in any direction, however he wants. And so the $14,000 one I found was the exact same thing. He has the same engine, everything. The second one had an outboard on it. It was similar but different. It would have needed a larger outboard than the one that was on that one. I just included it to show the price range. But basically, we're looking for a large 17 to 20 foot aluminum work skiff with an engine powerful enough to move the steel float. And what we think about 300 horsepower, if it was an outboard, would do it, you know, as long as there was another boat, say Elm was helping me with his vessel. Or like I said, the 453 that Bill Wheeler's using did it just fine. But it doesn't have to be a same skiff. It just needs to be a large aluminum work skiff with an engine capable of doing it.
And is there an estimate? Is there an estimate of the sort of the annual maintenance costs for a vessel like that?
I do not have that information. It would, you know, it would depend on the vessel. If we got a 17 foot stainless skiff with a 300 horsepower outboard, then it would be the, you know, basically me maintaining an outboard engine the same way that you say you do with your outboard on your Lund. If we got something with a diesel in it, it would obviously require more work, but not necessarily something that we couldn't get done here in town. But I can't, it would depend on what it was, you know, so I don't have an estimate because I don't know what it is that we'll end up getting.
So this listing that's on the screen right now says 115 horse gas outboard. What that? Did you say 300 horsepower?
That's what I was saying is I put that in there just to show what has been becoming available to give you guys a price range. That outboard would not have been big enough to control the. Based on the information I've got from Chris Hart, Helm, Vince, folks who you know understand moving big things like that, that it, we would need at least 300 horsepower to control the float while another boat attached, like say Elm's boat was attached to it. We started moving it in the spring with Chris Hart's aluminum boat. It had 500 horsepower on it, and although it moved it fine, it needed another vessel to kind of control it side to side, front and back. Whereas, say the Bill Wheeler's same skiff with the 453 diesel on it, he could move that thing around however he wanted in any direction, you know, conditions, whatever. So. The kind of the difference that same skiff that I put in there with 115 horsepower, that we would have had to have got a larger engine to control the movement of the skiff. I mean, the float.
And this, Mike, and I think one aspect to a work skiff like this is that it has a large diameter prop. So we can it can provide a lot of force. A lot of towing force or pushing force at slow speed. And that's what we really need for holding that steel float in place. I'll bet Jim Muscoviac has more to say about that. And I see his hands up. Jim?
Yeah, as somebody who's actually operated the same skiff, I mean, yeah, it's a low pitch, relatively, you know, high diameter propeller. And that's what does it. I mean, thinking about using a 300 horsepower outboard, I mean, they're just made for speed is really what they are. They don't have the diameter and the pitch is too great to really, really maneuver them. 453 engines are 1970s era motors. I don't think they were even made beyond then. So that's a consideration. The one in the picture there has an inboard. That's not for an outboard boat there. But the other question is, you know, who's going to operate it? It's, I mean, it may be here, but it does take a bit to make these things work right. That's my comments. And also, I have family in town. I'm going to be leaving around 7 o'clock.
So, Jim, this is Lewis. As long as we got you on here, do you have a sense of what the maintenance costs might be for a vessel like this as we look out years?
Really, if assuming the engine, one thing about 453s and the Jimmy engines there is they're pretty bulletproof. They don't require that much maintenance. They're not as refined as like a Caterpillar engine or anything like that, but they really can tolerate a lot of abuse. And you know, they have a good reputation. I would expect the maintenance costs to be very minimal, less so than with an outboard motor. I mean, it's not going to be used but twice a year, supposedly. And, you know, you change the oil, you make sure there's antifreeze in it, and make sure there's zincs on the hull, and, you know, cover it up in the wintertime, and you're in pretty good shape.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Tanya,
Yeah, thanks. I think it's seems to make sense for the city to have a boat. Just wondering about if anyone's looked into if there's insurance considerations for employees having more of a marine exposure. I know for nonprofits that can be kind of steep. And yeah, just want to make sure it's in the you know, in the priority amongst other city things we might need. Like, I don't think we have a vehicle, right, for the city. So I guess those are just a couple considerations. Thanks.
Good points there. Our city administrator has a comment.
Yeah, Tanya, and related to your question, we had recently looked over some of our workman's compensation amounts just because they, you know, they are significantly higher for the DRC and for Ben's position. And so I think he's already in that category. I don't think the category is going to change because they offer for the boat, because he's already in that category of Marine. So it might add to the equipment insurance, but I don't think it's going to add to the workman's compensation for employees.
If that this has been, I'd like to say one thing to Tanya's question, or to Tanya's statement also, is that although the city could use a vehicle and that would be great, the city's not spending $10,000 a year on not having a vehicle, which it's currently spending $10,000 a year on not having a boat. So that's kind of the problem I was trying to get past, is that we're spending all this money and we don't have anything that we can hold on to afterwards. So that was kind of the idea with getting our own vessel.
Yeah, thanks, Ben and Kathy. Just one kind of follow-up. If we don't have a vehicle, though, to trailer this, we have to use someone's personal vehicle. So it might be you know, we might discuss a full set to really make it something that you can pull out of the water, which seems like it'll be pretty important to do.
This is Mike. We could check, but it also may be possible to pull it with a Bobcat. I'd have to see what we needed to provide for the Bobcat to provide a trailer hitch on the forks or something, but that's commonly done. And since all we'd have to do is pull it out of the up the boat ramp and onto the harbor to uplands to wherever we're going to store it if we want it out of the water. So it's something we won't have to do very often, and it can probably most of the time just stay in the water, you know, in the small boat harbor, I would think, or up on the beach like the other skiffs. Before I come back to Lewis, I'd comment that the purpose of our scoping document here is to approve the project for us to look for a skiff. And we, at the same time we're doing this, we are introducing an NCO, it's a little farther down the agenda here, to put $30,000 in place so that we are ready to buy one if we have an opportunity. And if you'd like, if something comes up and we have our money in line and the project's approved, we can certainly call a quick special meeting to approve the purchase of this, since it's a fairly big purchase. It'd be nice to have the council clearly behind us on it. And if you didn't want to spend the money on whatever we found, we could decide that and then we'd keep looking. So that's kind of how I saw it. But I'm just trying to position us here to be able to purchase a skiff, a good work skiff, hopefully before this fall, before we have to move the float again. So that we can do it ourselves instead of paying $5,000 for somebody to come over and do 1 hour's work like we did this fall. Lewis, another comment?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I just wanted to, I don't think this is an issue, but I wanted to confirm that if we have a city employee operating that boat, There are no special licensing requirements, both for that employee and also if another, if someone else is on the boat besides the operator. I just want to be curious whether there are any Coast Guard licensing requirements for either of those scenarios. Thanks.
The big benefit of using a seine skiff or something under a work skiff that's under 25 feet is it gets us out of the requirement for the, I think they call it subpart M license or some such, for towing that has been, that is so hard to get. And that is why we haven't been able to get to pay somebody to tow this that had a larger boat. We were only able to use the seine skiff from Huna because it's under 25 feet and it gets us out of the license requirements. But if we, once we purchase this, we can certainly, or once we even identify what we might want to purchase, have a better figure, a better understanding of what maintenance costs might be on it, and whatever other operating parameters we'd have to meet, such as insurance and any licensing requirements. So, but otherwise, I couldn't answer that question. We'd have to do some more research for that part, Lewis.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Ben on this one? If not, it's on the consent agenda for approval as a project for us to look for a skiff. And Lewis, can I put down your hand, I guess?
I will. And Mike, I appreciate you pointing out to us that this is just a project to look for a skiff. I really appreciate that clarification every time something like this comes up so that people don't get the wrong idea that we're jumping into something prematurely. And that this is, it's really good note to make at the general meeting too. Thanks.
Good. Yeah. We're just trying to position ourselves to make a decision. And if we don't have the project approved and the money in place, then we could have a, we could miss out on a really good opportunity because these things don't necessarily stay on the market for a long period of time. Okay. The next item is to approve the scoping document for the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Hall exterior painting project. And Chief Martinez, are you on? And to give us an introduction on this?
Yes, I am. So this
Thank
project-
you. Would it, you like-
Oh, yeah, I can.
Yeah, good.
Okay. So yeah, this project here is mainly just to keep maintained the exterior of the building. As everyone probably see, there is chip paint, some fading, and most of a lot of the spots. So it's just to keep the value of the building, it would be best to, well, repaint the exterior. We're not really planning on changing any color of the paint. It would stick to the fire hall red that everyone is on the building itself. Other than that, the one thing I want to mention that's in the scoping document, that the $2,700 price range is totally off. I did a little bit more research after I submitted this. It's from a recommendation from Fanpool Painting. He said it would take around $18,000 to actually paint the building correctly. That's not necessarily a direct quote. It was a rough estimate. I think his direct quote was $16,000 to $18,000, but it's not $2,700. I did submit the correct form to Karen for the general meeting next week. But other than that, I think it would be a great idea to get the building repainted, make it look nice. The only thing is that this summer is probably not gonna happen this year. Probably be best to wait until better weather of next year, before the fiscal year ends, at least. And that will probably be the time to do it. So anybody else, any questions?
This is Mike. So I guess you're giving us a new project budget that'll show up in the actual packet. And presumably we'd put out an RFQ for this if it's a project that size, and get some quotes. So we'd need to move for this too. So we need to do any of this scoping document just positions us, develop an RFQ for it, and move the estimated amount of money for the project into or from our reserve funding for capital projects into a budget line for this specific project. So I think that's the way we'd be proceeding on this. So this is the first step to prove us to work on the project.
I didn't make any promises or anything. I was just trying to do some research and just like say, hey, I'm just trying to figure out how much money we should set aside. Generally, I didn't. We may actually find cheaper rates for construction companies in town as well, because I think Van Poole is in Juneau. And but I do realize, I think he also, the same company painted the school and maybe the library, but I'm not sure on that one.
Right, and we have to make sure that the anybody who's bidding on this and is providing materials for it is aware of the type of siding we have and any adherence problems there may be to that siding. We, when we did City Hall and the Fire Hall, that was back when Steve Manchester was chief and he managed those projects, and the siding came pre-coated, but we also noticed that some of the, I think it's cement siding, concrete-like siding, and it bled through the paint in places. So we'd want to make sure that it's compatible. So we can do that. Any other questions for Sol on that? Lewis.
I might have missed it, but did this project include replacing some of the wood, reattaching some wood, recaulking, those sorts of things beyond just putting paint on?
No, this was just kind of like an informal email between me and Mr. Van Poole. I believe that his last name. But as far as I know, if we had to replace any wood or do any recaulking, it probably would cost a little more. I do believe that there's a reason why he gave that kind of like general price range and probably did a little bit over a smid, but not for sure.
And does he do that work too?
I did not ask. So I don't know. I would think he would, but I'm not so sure.
Okay. Yeah. That's just the kind of stuff that is often necessary for older buildings that haven't been coated for a while. And it seems like it would be really good to either make that part of the job or sort of a pre-job before the painters come, because you don't want to just put paint over bad wood, et cetera, et cetera. So there's just a thought there. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, Lewis, I think that's an excellent point. And as we develop the project, we can certainly make adjustments like that, evaluate the building a little more closely and see if it looks like we need to include that. And when we haven't, when we put out an RFQ, we can include those items in it. And we'll just have to try to put enough money in the capital project line to cover those contingencies, I would think. Any other comments on from other council members on this one? Okay, we'll keep that on the consent agenda. And the last item on the consent agenda is introduction of capital project funding. It's an NCO to cover two things. One is the Sainskiff purchase, in which we've put $30,000 into the NCO. We hope that's enough, that we can find something in that, you know, under $30,000. We'll probably just have to keep looking if we don't immediately. And then the other item is to add $5,000 to the project for the library bike shelter design portion, because we had $10,000 left in the library project for the roofing that we were using for the design of the bike shelter. And the proposal from our design engineer came in at something like $13,000. So we couldn't write a PO to them for the full amount for the full design. And then gave them an NTP to proceed with the design as far as 20%, the schematic design, where we needed a stop point anyway to approve the design. And the idea here is to fund the rest of that design with the extra money in the NCO, moving it from that $5,000 comes from our checking account, according to the from what we just have in the checking account would be the source of that, according to the treasurer. The $5,000 would give us, we need a little bit more to get the fire marshal to approve it. So there's some fees for that. And we're not going to really need $15,000 total, but that just gives us enough room so that we don't have to move money once again. So those that NCO is in the packet. And we're just introducing it this month. We would approve it next month. Do any council members have a question on that NCO? Okay, well, we'll leave the NCO on the consent agenda. That's for introduction with public hearing in September. And so that means, oh, by the way, just this afternoon, P&D engineers sent me the 20% design on the library bike shelter. And so they've completed that first step already. We'd have to approve the NCO at a special meeting sometime in October, but I think we're not gonna build this fall anyway. And so we don't have to rush, and we can give them the NTP to go to 100% design after we have the NCO passed in September. And we can cut a purchase order on money that is fully appropriated. So that's my strategy on that. Does anybody have a question on that? Okay. So that gets us through the consent agenda. We'll keep all four items on the consent agenda. The next item will be ordinance for public hearing. This was introduced last month. Ordinance providing for the amendment of Title VI City Department's Contracted Services Chapter 6.03, Waste Disposal and Recycling. We went over this a little bit before. Paul Berry, are you available online here to give a quick review again to remind everybody what you're doing in this? With your adding your assistant and so forth. know whether he's on. Okay, I'm, yeah, I don't think Paul's on. So it's one of the problems of not having everybody in the room, like it'd be nice to have. But this is the item that we introduced last month to add his his operator position as separate from the operator manager position. And it just changes the authorized structure of staff at the DRC. And so if you have any questions, you can look at the look it over and ask Paul during the week if you want some more information on that. Otherwise, we'll be ready to have public hearing on it next Monday night. Any questions or comments at this time on it? Okay. Well, that'll stay on the agenda then under ordinance for public hearing. We'll move on then to the new business section of the draft agenda for next Monday night. And item 12 on here is the introduction of FY23-XX, the numbers to be assigned. Amendments to City Ordinance Title V elections. And our clerk has worked really hard to update our election procedures, and it requires some changes to what our code says. And I'd like to call on our clerk to give you an introduction of what she's worked up here, please.
Thank you. So the first thing on my to-do list timeline for elections is to review our ordinance. And I took some notes from last year during the election season. And the first thing that I have on here, sorry, when I speak in my microphone, I can't see my screen. It's too far away. So so the first thing I added, and a reserved section in the ordinance was a personal representative. Nowhere in our ordinance did it address personal representatives, otherwise known as special needs voting, except for in absentee. And so I added that section. And then the next section is a contested election. And as you all know, we had a contested election last year, and our ordinance was super vague on that, and we had a lot of questions throughout that process, and so I really wanted to update that for this year. With both of these, I used other cities as examples and comparisons to update ours, and I used Juneau, Sitka, Craig, and the city of Houston, Alaska, as references for these two changes. For the contested election, I decided it was just easier to cross out everything that was there and start over instead of piecemealing in the changes. So that's why you see that whole section striked out. But I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Any questions for Karen on the addition of assisted voting here, a personal representative for voting, and for the process for contest of an election? She's set forth on the contest some more discrete steps and I think more clear language for us to follow if we ever do have a contested election again in the future. And it should, I think, any conflicts or disagreements about whether that's being done properly. So Jim Muscoviac, comment.
I did, you know, work my way through that, and I made a number of non-substantive edits to it. You got that, didn't you? I sent it to Mike and Karen.
Yeah,
thanks, Councilmember Makowiak. I did get those, and I did make those changes except for one, and I'll have that in the version for the general meeting. But I did make those changes. And I should also add on the contested election that it provides a deadline to submit a contested election notice, and also what it has a list of grounds for contesting an election, and then procedures for filing and the process after it's filed. And we didn't have any of those things before.
Okay, well, thank you.
And thanks for taking a close reading through that, Jim. That really helps. Looks like Louis Sharman would like to speak.
Was Joe in front of me?
Let's see. I'm just seeing you on the top of the screen, but we can get to you.
Okay. I don't have much to say. I just wanted to thank Karen for doing that. I'm definitely going to vote in support of this thing. Anything that makes voting better and contesting elections more clear is are good things. So thanks.
Thanks. Yes, we are trying to make sure that everybody has a chance to vote and feels comfortable voting. And as we prepare for the elections in the fall, we're going to make sure that we're doing all we can to make it as easy as possible for qualified voters here to vote. Okay, so I think it's important that before the next meeting, if you haven't gone through it in detail, I've gone through it, but I'm going to go through it again to make sure I'm familiar with the language in it. We could get comments from the public on it, and we need to be prepared to address those comments. If there's something they've suggested that we should incorporate, then those are things that we should consider. But this this is only the introduction of it, and it would be actually adopted in the next month at the September meeting. So this, at this point, we're only introducing it. Okay. We can do that. Kathy has some information relating to licensing on that she just found relating to licensing on the SaneSkip idea. Go ahead.
So Louis, you had asked about Coast Guard requirements, and what it appears to me from, you know, looking at the licensing site and the Coast Guard is, first of all, we're not going to be using this skiff for commercial purposes in terms of going out for hire. So we're exempt from it from that aspect. And also, if it's under 26 feet, it's typically exempt from it depending on the type of operations it's doing. Sometimes with mining operations, that might change. And even if you were a licensed for commercial hire person, for towing operations, like, for example, let's just say we had this boat and we needed to assist with some search and rescue operations. If you're doing those type of operations, you don't have to be specially licensed either. Now, I have a friend who instructs this stuff, and I intend to give him a call and to find out for sure your questions. But from what I can tell readily in my past experience with putting classes on with this stuff, he's not going to need it.
Okay, thanks. Louis, I see you got a thumbs up there, so that's great. Thanks. Okay, any other questions on that item or comments? Going back to the elections thing, I think we're done with that and I can move on. Okay. That takes us to item 13 on the draft agenda, introduction of an ordinance change, providing for the amendment of City Ordinance Title 4, Revenue and Finance, Chapter 4.12, Management of Funds, et cetera, deposits, withdrawals. And this relates to, I'm going to turn it over to Kathy here because she's has a more detailed understanding of this, but we were trying to do a couple of things here in between this and I think item 15. I wanted to make it possible, if the council approves and agrees with this idea, I wanted to make it possible for one of the signatories on our checks to be the city administrator. And that we have a lot of checks that get held up because maybe it's got my signature on it, because I come in here fairly often as one of the council members' signatures, but we have to wait until somebody else can get in. And I couldn't see any particular reason in with the maturity of our city government as we've reached it now, that both signatures had to be a council member. If we had the city administrator's signature as one of the approved signatories, that would be good. And then the other item that we need to do is provide a credit card for our marine facilities coordinator. So Kathy, can you explain further what we're doing with item 13?
Item 13?
At least that's what I've got. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
change there, Title 4.
There's two different items. One is by resolution at this next meeting, we can adopt the change to include the marine facilities coordinator to be able to have a credit card. He does a lot of running around in the summertime trying to get stuff fixed. He has a lot of things that he has to do like quickly and happen at the last minute. And the minutia for him to do that is kind of frustrating and kind of makes him spin his wheels. So we want to add his position as somebody who could have a credit card. And that can be done just through the resolution. And then as Mike stated, he wanted to have this position, my position, be able to sign checks just so that to expedite payments if we need to, without having to worry about whether another council member is available. But that requires an ordinance change. So that has to get put on approval for first reading at this next meeting. So it's two separate things. One can be passed at this upcoming meeting, which is the credit card. The other one goes up for first reading and will have to be resolved in September. And I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, that helps. And I think I should explain for those of you who haven't been involved in the city since it started back in 2004, the requirement for having two council member signatures on checks was put in place by the first council and or one of the very first ones, when the city was a much less mature organization. It was very new. We had committees doing most of the work of what are now departments. We had one clerk treasurer at the time. And the council was, I think, correctly anxious about making sure that they understood what checks were going out, what was getting paid to whom and why, and all of that. We're to the point now where we're a much more mature organization. Most cities, of course, don't have their city council members or their assembly members signing all the checks. And I think we've gotten to where we're covered well enough if one council member, which could be the mayor, but doesn't have to be, and the city administrator are two signatories. Now, that doesn't mean the city administrator has to be one. We could still use two council members, but having the city, making it possible for the city administrator to do it would mean we don't have to drag one of you in to sign a bunch of checks routinely as you've been doing. So do you have any questions on that? We're just introducing this time. If you think it's a good idea, if you don't think it's a good idea, we don't have to even have it on the agenda. But that was my suggestion. So any comments from the rest of you? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands coming up. So of course you'll have an opportunity to say something again when we introduce it next Monday night. And then of course in September when we take action on that one. Okay. Find my agenda again here. The next one is CY22XX. This is a resolution updating the policy and procedures for the Gustavus Public Library. And do we have one of our librarians online to speak to this item? They've done a lot of good work on this, very thoughtful work, it appears to me.
Hi, this is Jesse.
Hi, Jesse, please proceed. Tell us about it.
Thank you. So Leanne and I have been discussing our library policy and reviewing it. And there's a few places where we wanted to make some changes. One of the first places was in our our children's use policy. And there in it, we want to eliminate and then replace, and a couple other things we wanted to add. One of the things we wanted to eliminate was the bullet point that talked about library staff and volunteers not being responsible for contacting parents or guardians if a child's asked to leave the library due to behavior or the library closing. We reached out to a couple state librarians, Julie Niederhauser and Patience Fredrickson, and found that that was a pretty uncommon practice in Alaska libraries. And so we felt that we should change that. And we also felt that if we are having problems with children in the library not behaving appropriately, that we would want to reach out to their parents and guardians. And so we would like to change that part of our policy. Another piece of the policy regarding children's use in the library is we assume that if parents are sending their children to the library unsupervised, that their parents are responsible for them. But Leanne and I would really like to run some day camps at the library. And so in order to make that possible with our policy, we added a statement that says that library staff and volunteers could assume responsibility for supervision of children with written guardian consent for special events like day camps. And we also added a point in there that if the library is closing and there's unattended children present, we would attempt to contact guardians to let them know that their children are there and perhaps need a way home. And another spot in our policy that we made, I guess, considerable change was with the educator library accounts. We eliminated a bunch of language towards the end of it. and it pertained to children coming with teachers, and teachers having to check out the materials for the students. And so last year we were doing it differently anyways, and children were, they had their own library cards and were checking it out. And so we updated it to represent what we're actually doing there. And we also eliminated the part that teachers wouldn't be responsible if they lost materials. We want the teachers to replace the materials if they do lose them, not the children's materials, but things that the teachers themselves check out. And then we spent some time looking at our collections policy. And that's just the part that sets some criteria for the things that we purchase, the materials, books, DVDs, for the library. And a big part of the collections policy is the challenged materials section. And that is where a patron can challenge something that is in the library, a book, a DVD, movie, something they feel that shouldn't be there. And that has been happening across the nation. People are challenging more and more books. And so we wanted to be prepared for that in the, you know, in case that happened, and make sure that our policy worked the way we would like to see it work. And so we spent some time looking at that, discussing that. I attended a webinar to learn more about challenges. And the idea behind challenges is that it gives the patron a way to kind of participate and speak up. And so we wanted to make sure that people felt they could do that and that there was a process. And so we added quite a bit to that section. You can read it there. And I think that is mostly it. There's a few other odds and ends in here. All the changes are in red, and the things that we wanted to strike out, of course, have lines to them. I'd be happy, of course, to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Great, Jesse. Any questions? Joe VanderZanen.
I'm not sure if I heard all of it correctly, but I noticed reading this earlier, the section about kids being still at the library at closing time. And I think there were two places in the wording there where you had the option to contact law enforcement. And I wondered, is something like that, that type of wording, really necessary or useful in a place like Gustavus, or does it have to be there? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess, you know, Leanne and I discussed that, and, you know, if we were unable to contact anybody for that child, we're not going to just leave the library, you know, in the evening and leave them there. And so if we had to reach out to somebody, we would look for somebody in that role to support us. If you have any suggestions or any ideas that you think would make more sense in Gustavus, you know, we would be happy to hear them.
Joe VanderZanen here again. I don't have any great suggestions right now. It's just that law enforcement is pretty much non-existent. I wouldn't think the park would appreciate a call. So there must be some other means of dealing with that problem if it becomes a problem. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Mike. How about this suggestion? Could you talk with the fire chief about whether we could substitute a call to the fire chief, and maybe we could get a fire volunteer to assist in locating the parent and getting the child safely home? Is that a possibility? Is it an option?
Yeah, I think that sounds like a great possibility if that is something that Seoul would support. It makes more sense.
We can, why don't you have a discussion with him at in there? Of course, it's real easy for me to volunteer the fire team for yet another task, but to the chief's view on that and whether that's a task that that volunteers could maybe take on. It's not going to happen very often. It sounds like, Kathy, you have a comment too?
You have a comment on that. I mean, the whole thing is about liability, and you don't necessarily have to put law enforcement in there, but you could say the appropriate authorities. I mean, maybe it's DFYS, maybe it's law enforcement. You could start with, you know, the fire department, you know, as a welfare assistance to call, try and locate parents or relatives, but liability wise, you're limited with just trying to take various actions on your own, that you don't know the family situation, and contacting somebody outside of that family could cause a lot of other problems. So I would say we could say the appropriate authorities rather than law enforcement, such as, and we can list some of those things, but we have to be careful of our own liability with something like that. So
good thought. So maybe you and Seoul and the libraries could sort of chat about that.
I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole intent of this is to take care of the kids.
Right.
And, you know, that's the number one thing, to make sure the kids are safe. And if a parent has been delayed somehow in picking them up, we don't want to just turn them out without knowing that they're going to be safe. So,
right.
And I appreciate the librarians giving that such careful thought. And in fact, I think these changes show the value of having two librarians that are so experienced in dealing with and supervising children as part of their former teaching duties. And we're lucky to have that they can bring that expertise to this and that degree of thoughtfulness. So, okay. So thanks, Joe, for raising that question, and we'll continue to work that a little bit and possibly see a different wording in what is posted in the packet on Wednesday. Okay. That brings us to updating a resolution that will update the policy and procedure for authorized account signers. And this gets us to the card to listing the Marine Facilities Coordinator as a person who can have a card. I believe, am I correct on this finally, Kathy?
Yeah, basically it's the same thing we just went over. One required resolution. This one does not, this one is a resolution, but it's just a policy change, so we can do this in the next meeting. And it's just to simplify things and allow Ben to go about his business without having to run back and forth to City Hall every time he needs to buy some line. So, which happened many times. So, he has a budget, he knows what it is. And I feel like we will help streamline a process by getting that position a credit card. Thanks.
Okay, so we'll have the resolution that we use to adopt the policy and procedure and the updated policy and procedure on the agenda. So any questions on that? Facilities coordinator to go over and buy some widgets to Toshko if he needs to, that sort of thing. All right. That gets us through the agenda, unless anybody has any overall questions, something I've missed. Okay, I'd like to proceed to a couple of discussion items, just kind of open discussion on these, no formality. The first is the idea of whether to negotiate with the state to to buy that central tract in the harbor. You may recall that when the city did its municipal entitlements, the council at the time chose to select, I think it's tracts B1 and B3, if I'm remembering correctly, on the two sides of the harbor property, all tied sort of to the DRC property, which was another transfer, separate transfer. But they did not choose to select the central part of the harbor. And because we didn't own it, they worked with DNR to develop a cooperative resource management agreement, a CRMA, to provide for joint management of that central harbor tract, actually the whole of the harbor at that time, because at the time, actually the first two tracts, when they did the CRMA, as I recall, the first two tracts also were sort of in limbo as in the transfer process. So the CRMA managed as if it was all DNR property, and that included the three tracks across there, plus the submerged land out to the center line of the channel was included in the CRMA. And the purpose of getting that CRMA approved was so that they could meet a major goal of the council at that time, which was to upgrade the harbor considerably. The boat ramp was in tatters and almost unusable at the time. The barge ramp facility was no longer usable. There was no organization of places to store or temporary storage of boats and trailers and all those things that are no long-term storage, all those things that we have down there now were provided for or allowed under the CRMA, and the city made those, I think they used grant funding, and did a major project to complete the harbor construction and layout as you see it today. But so we still manage that under the terms of a CRMA that was written before the city owned the two sidetracks and before any of the changes to the harbor were made. So the description of the harbor in the CRMA is as it was in 2004 before all that work, and you wouldn't recognize it today for what it was. It's so different. So the CRMA is pretty much out of date other than the fact that we have a general agreement with the state to manage the harbor, but the specifics of it are no longer very relevant, and that CRMA 5 anyway. So our options would be to do a new CRMA that reflected current operating conditions and set updated authorities and rules and so forth, and continue to provide management authority to the center line of the river so that the floats are covered and so forth. Or we could buy the central tract and also buy the submerged lands out to the center of the channel so that we don't have to deal with DNR anymore at all on them. I talked to John King out here in May, and we walked the harbor just to give him some familiarity with that. At the time, he said he couldn't tell us what price per acre we might have to pay. He could only say that it wouldn't exceed an assessed value. He did say that the submerged lands could be transferred to us at no charge other than we would have to pay for the survey of them. And the survey is sort of virtual. They just, they don't set monuments out in the river channel. They only determine those corner points by GPS reading. So it's a pretty simple survey. So we don't know what it would cost, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like, say, $8,000 an acre, or, you know, I think that was something like what we spent for the city hall track back a few years ago. But we don't know how this is going to shake out until unless we negotiate with them. And so what I want to know is whether you members of the council that I should develop this further with DNR, start a negotiation, tell them that we are interested in buying it and get them to settle on approximately what it's going to cost and what the process of it would be. And given how long it took to get the transfer done for the city hall lots, and the process could take 5 years, so we'd only be kicking it off. So I'd like to know what you think about that. Do you think it's important that the city own the harbor that it manages? It gives us clear proprietary jurisdiction over it, and I think a little stronger authority for setting rules there, doing improvements and so forth. Louis Sharman, your comments.
Great idea. And maybe they'll sell it to us for a dollar.
I don't think we'll get off that easy, but they'll probably want to get something out of it that represents some of its value. But I'm glad you like the idea of proceeding with negotiating. And of course, the council would make any final decision on whether to buy it later based on whatever we can negotiate. So other thoughts? Joe Van Der Zanden.
Did you mention how many acres you're talking about?
As I recall, that tract is something like 9.6 acres, and that doesn't include the submerged lands, but John King seemed to indicate that he was pretty certain the submerged land portion would have no charge. So a little less than 10 acres.
So it could be a substantial amount of money. I guess I'm not really following what the benefit to us would be, since we already have a use agreement with the state. We still can't drive pilings to improve the floats situation down there. And to my mind, I think benefit to the city wise, I think we would be, the money would be better spent at the gravel pits. I know you're not in favor of trying to purchase more land, but somehow we need to get approval to work in the fish ponds out there, because the crane has worked out to be a good solution. It's just that the crane isn't working, so they're back to excavators, and we're kind of on a time limit there as well. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Tanya Lewis.
Yeah, thanks. It seems like a good idea to me. And I'm not sure how it would weigh out with the gravel pits, in terms of priority, but I do trust Joe's opinion on that. And, you know, maybe we should be looking that way. For me, it would really help to see plats of these areas when we have these discussions, so I know what we're talking about. So I don't know if that'd be possible to send the council plats and indicate which ones we own versus which ones we're talking about buying. And that would be helpful out at the gravel pits too. So definitely open to the idea of the city acquiring more land that we manage. Thanks.
Okay, I'll send you the plat. I've got it on my computer. Joe makes a good point that we also need to work the issues at the gravel pit, which could involve requesting land there as well. I don't think that one obviates the possibility of the other. We can probably do both, especially over a number of years that this would take. It'd be, we would just have to appropriate capital funding for the land purchase at the harbor. And if we choose to purchase land or say a well at the harbor, we've got to purchase that with capital funds. So I don't think that it's impossible to do them both. The gravel pit, we are able pretty well to manage it now. We do need a different model, and that's something that I continue to value Joe's input on. But I think it's kind of a separate issue. So what I could do, if you think, if enough of you, I'm not hearing a loud and resounding no to this and some support for it, I can put a motion on the agenda to begin a negotiation to flesh out what the purchase would involve and approximately how much we have, and then report back to the council as to whether to proceed further with it, if you'd like. Don't see any more hands coming up. I guess I kind of like the idea of owning property and then managing it so that, I mean, the beach thing is, it's great to be doing that with the CRMA, but even that, the CRMA down there is, the DNR is now asking or suggesting that maybe it needs to be changed to a special use permit. They own it and they can set the rules. If we own property like in our harbor, which is really critical to the community, then we set all the rules. Well, within the overall limitations of state and federal law, we do. So we don't have to ask permission or whatever from DNR as part of the value of owning it. So, okay, if nobody really objects, then I'll put a motion on the agenda to that end, and we can investigate it further. But I didn't want to charge off on this if you all thought it was a bad idea. Okay. The next item I wanted to ask you about is groundskeeping, particularly for the Salmon River Park, but for other facilities. We did a lot of work to spruce up the park for the 4th of July. Spent quite a bit of money on flowers, and it turned out we got enough flowers that we could also do more hanging baskets, and we could do them for the library and plant flowers at the library and at the Welcome to Gustavus sign at the airport and things like that. We had great volunteer help from the LDS folks to mow the lawn and help put the, you know, get the park so it was really looking great for the 4th of July, as they volunteered to do in the past. But already the grass is tall and since then, and it's beginning to look like it needs some more attention, and we just don't have a separate budget line park. And I would like us to perhaps have or fund a budget line for groundskeeping on all city facilities. So it could be used even say at the old post office or anything that we own to keep our facilities looking great and make improvements. And so we might use that line, say, to fund flowers every year for the boxes out there and the baskets. We might consider contracting with somebody for grounds maintenance. It's sort of on the order of what we do for roads, only be a much smaller contract, of course. So we could call on them to mow the grass, weed the flower boxes or plant the flower boxes. We could use that money to pay to purchase flowers each summer. Just that general stuff that we've kind of been using funds that we could grab from building maintenance or whatever. And we really ought to have a budget line for that. And I, in fact, I would hope that we could use an NCO to appropriate money in addition to this year's fiscal budget, so we'd have the money in line, especially for next spring, and even for some repairs that we need to do. Ben's fixing broken picnic tables out there now and trying to make one out of three of them that are broken, or two out of three that are broken. We need to buy some more tables, things like that. If we had a budget line that was specific for our groundskeeping and maintenance of our, especially our parks and lands around our facilities, it would be a lot easier to get those, to keep them up and keep our facilities looking great, which I think reflects importantly on the community. So what do you think about doing something like that? Is that something that you'd like to us to amend our budget a little bit, say $10,000 or something, to give us some money for keeping our grounds up better? Comments? Joe Van Der Zanden.
I was just wondering if this is normal city stuff where somebody with a lawnmower has to have a license and insurance and all that kind of stuff and charge $35 an hour for mowing a lawn, or if it's simpler than that. That's just my question. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd hope not. If there are various ways we could do this. To some extent, you know, for some items, we can use our marine facilities coordinator, and he's been doing a lot of little side jobs. He cleans the restrooms here in the park, and he's fixing the tables now, and he helped with our getting our parking area our rearrangements in place. So he can do some of that. We can do that with our existing staff. Beyond that, we either would have to hire somebody on a part-time basis or contract it out. And if there are, you know, advantages and disadvantages to both of those approaches, I kind of like contracting it out, just like we do our custodial service. We can have somebody who's can show up with a rider mower or something and can do carpentry tasks to fix the tables or that sort of thing. So that's kind of how I would use it. I can't imagine it's going to be it's going to require some regulatory driven high cost rates or anything. It's something that's going to be done, probably settled on the market rate for what somebody's willing to do it for and what we're willing to pay for it. Other comments? Okay, I'm not seeing anything else come up. Tanya, good. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, anything we can do to take some stress off our employees and other, you know, let them focus on their main jobs. Another thing that comes to mind is shoveling, right? That's an issue every year, every winter, shoveling up the walkway. So maybe this could cover that as well. $10,000 seems like a lot, but I really don't know the scope, just wondering if maybe we want to kind of just try five or something this year and then see how it goes. But I definitely support, I think we need some sort of groundwork. And hopefully we can find someone to do the job. Thanks.
Sure. Any other thoughts on this? Okay, well, I think the way forward is for me to generate an NCO for introduction maybe next month for some money for that line item. And then the city administrator would be responsible for operating that function. I mean, for overseeing that function, not mowing the grass, but And we'd have to come up with a way to, once we had a budget line in place. Remember, we are spending money on this already. We're just not, we just don't have a clear budget line for it. And I think we could, we would probably want to spend more money so we could do some great things. I can see us doing a little more landscaping in the park and so forth. And we just can't count always on volunteers to get it done. It's worth paying for. Lewis?
Yeah, to me, the size of the appropriation, how much money we're going to spend on it matters. And that's going to determine how supportive I am or whether I'm supportive. So I would value some more discussion and a proposal of how much before I find myself having to vote against something or propose an amendment to alter the amount. So I'd like us to get to kind of hammer this out a little more so we can all be supportive of it before we go much farther. Thanks.
That's a fair expectation, Lewis. Thanks. Any other thoughts on this one? Okay, I think what we'll do is put together an NCO for some amount, and I can list, kind of break that down on what it might be spent for. So you can get a feeling for whether it's enough or it's too much, that sort of thing. And so we can, you'll have plenty of opportunity to decide what amounts. Okay. Other than that, I just wanted to let you know some upcoming meetings I've got and have had. Let's see, I might start with, I had a Zoom meeting with Jason Custer of the of our power company, AP&T, and was joined by Dean Weichel. Jason wanted to talk about heat pumps in our facilities, and we had an interesting discussion. Of course, Dean has worked with me on our heat pump project, and we have a project that you approved for doing heat pumps for City Hall. Jason thought that he may be able to approach one of the manufacturer's reps to see if they'd be interested in doing a demonstration and, you know, here perhaps donating a system or parts of it to make it really attractive. Would be one of the major manufacturers like Daikin, Fujitsu, or Mitsubishi. Maybe we could get some help on that would benefit us with getting a system in place, say at City Hall, where the council, which the council did approve, and also having it serve as a demonstration of heat pump systems to the community. Of course, AP&T is interested in encouraging people to install heat pumps and electrify their heating systems. So we're gonna see what might come of that, and if there are some benefits that we could get that would make a project particularly attractive to us to carry out. So that's something we'll be developing. And before we do anything critical, I'll let you know. It's at this point, it's just finding out what might be available and some assistance there. I've been contacted also by the Tongass Federal Credit Union. And as it turns out, the lead for that also came from Jason Custer, who is on their board of directors. And Tongass Federal Credit Union, I think, is centered down in Ketchikan. And they have credit unions in several communities in Southeast Alaska, either full branches or in some cases, some micro branches. And there's a proposal by Huna Indian Association to have a micro branch at the Gustavus Inn. Whether or not that will develop via HIA is anybody's guess. That's something that they have said they might like to do. There is a branch of the Tongass Federal Credit Union in Huna now that's been quite popular. So Helen Michael, who's the CEO, asked to have a meeting with me and along with her operating officers on, the 11th of August at 10 a.m. We're going to have a phone or I guess a Zoom discussion. It's not something that I have any approval or authority to make any real decisions on, but it's they were interested in learning more about Gustavus and how and whether a credit union, even a micro credit union site here that's hosted by something like HIA or could be hosted by any of a lot of other, some of theirs are even hosted in a school, would be attractive here. And I thought it'd be nice to hear what they think they'd like to do here and have to offer. And I can share that with you as I learn more about it. There are a couple of executives coming from Search who are coming over to Gustavus to look at the new clinic construction. I think one's maybe a CEO or something like that. I'm not sure his horsepower there. They're going to come over tomorrow, and they asked to meet with me and the city administrator just to learn more about Gustavus. The connection was set up by Dr. Rod Vaught, who's now a resident here in Gustavus and is the assigned sort of liaison between Search and the community of Gustavus, not specifically the city, but the whole community of Gustavus, to assure that Search is meeting the needs and expectations of the community through their clinic. They wanted to stop by and get to know us a little better, and we have a meeting scheduled for 10 a.m. tomorrow here at City Hall, and I'm going to be picking them up at the airport just before that. Another meeting, we've been requested to have a meeting with Mary Portola when she comes for, I think she's got a campaign fundraiser here for the House seat. And she wanted to meet with us to understand a little more what Gustavus is like. And she'll be coming into City Hall at 3:30 p.m. on the 8th of August. And so we've got about half an hour to spend with her to help her understand a little more about Gustavus. And we're glad she's interested. So that's kind of what I've got coming up on. Oh, and on the, again, the bike shed shelter and determining whether it looks like they're on the right track, and then we'll be prepared to give them an NTP to continue with that design once we have the funds in line and can write a PO for the full amount. Any other comments or questions on any of these or anything else that council members would like to chat about in our work session, informal as it is? Louis Sharman.
A couple of unrelated things, but both of which are related to items we already touched on tonight, and I apologize for not bringing them up earlier. The first one is a question for Ben, if he's still here. I'm just curious on his perspective on how the skiff ramps, the use of the skiff ramps are going out there. On the dock, there are times it seems when it is pretty hard for someone to get in there overnight for a skiff, and whether users are following the rules out there. And then, and if you're there, Ben, hold that thought. But my second thought is for you, Mike, or maybe Kathy, regarding the acquisition of that land at the boat harbor. It seemed like some of the reticence on the council had to do with the finding the money to buy it, you know, $80,000 to $100,000. And I'm just curious whether that's the kind of thing that we could ask one of our representatives in state government to help make happen for us as a part of a piece of legislation or something to either make DNR whole or just have the land transferred to us at no charge or anything. So just those couple of things. Thanks.
Okay, Ben was on by his phone and I don't see his phone on the line anymore. So I think you could ask Ben that question directly anytime you'd like. And then if you have any thoughts on it after you talk to him, let's chat about it and maybe in council comments after the general meeting. Did you want to?
Well, Lewis, I was kind of thinking along the same lines. I know, Mayor feels like they're probably going to want to get, some portion of a pound of flesh, but, in the grand scheme of things, they might be willing to just wash their hands of the whole thing. So I can't say that for sure, but I think that, Senator Kyle and or Keel and others might go to bat for us on something like that, as well as, obviously the governor was out here. He seemed impressed by some things. And so he might recognize us as somebody that he could, push his own commissioner or people to do. So it's worth a try, definitely, sure, to go see about getting it just transferred. I'd be willing to work on that for sure.
We were transferred the gravel pit because the state didn't want to deal with it anymore. And the same thing with the DRC property. They, as I recall, they were not charged against our municipal entitlement. So there could be something there, especially if they think the harbor is a pain for them and they just soon unload it. Otherwise, the state has rules for transfer to municipalities, and we'd probably have to follow a process in line with those rules. Fortunately, the tracts are surveyed already, except for the subtitle part, so we wouldn't have to wait for a survey, and we wouldn't have to pay for a survey. So that, I'm assuming we wouldn't have to, since they surveyed those three tracts and the tract is perfectly described and they could just transfer it to us. What the charge is something we just have to, we only find out more when we talk to them. And I think John King was very interested in working with us on it. And I'm sure I'm confident we'll get good advice from that department on what's the best way forward. But we can certainly let our legislative delegation know that we're interested in that at a decent price or a free transfer or something. So it's a great idea. Right. Good. Bert Cottle, right, would be a possibility. Okay. Anything else? Comments from the rest of you and things you'd like to discuss? Okay, well then I think we've covered our work session agenda. We'll have the agenda out on Wednesday per the schedule, and I'll have a mayor's report in that packet. So thank you all for tuning in tonight, council members, for their thoughts and suggestions on things, and we'll see everybody next Monday night. Good night, everybody. Yeah. I just clicked off. So.